I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, famous quotes, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous hosts, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Raven Puff Common Room.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering chapters 5 and 6 of The Chamber of Secrets, The Whomping Willow, and Gilderoy Lockhart. In these chapters, Harry and Ron make the dumbest decision to date.
No kidding.
And yes. How the hell did Lockhart get past an interview with Dumbledore?
That is an excellent question. Excellent.
Yeah. But overall, first time reading, what did you think of these two chapters?
I think that I'm so glad you started it off the way you did, because it was dumbfounding to read the escape to Hogwarts and the lack of logic. I guess just the urgency and the panic, which caused them to make this weird decision. And Gilderoy Lockhart reminds me of somebody that used to be in the public eye a lot that is not very much anymore, thank goodness. So that was my takeaway.
Was he as good looking as Lockhart?
Oh God, no. No. I am, I think they're both like blonde. I don't know. I think Lockhart was portrayed a different way in the movie.
I think Lockhart, blonde or definitely in the movie, he was like a strawberry blonde.
Yeah. And not necessarily my cup of tea. I prefer dark brown hair. But
all dark and handsome.
Yes, sure. Yes.
Yeah. But before we get to Lockhart, it's, of course, complete chaos trying to round these kids up to go to school. It's like herding cats.
I think a lot of people can relate if they had brothers or sisters or just trying to get ready to go in the morning. Granted, not the like pandemonium in the Weasley house because there are so many of them. But and then there's the element of magic, too, which should be more helpful. I don't know.
I think the writer, Harry, is trying to emphasize that it doesn't matter if you have magic helping you or not. Just traveling in general sucks.
I think that is an excellent point. Yeah, because I will get there in a minute. But the thing that I liked, though, is that Harry mentioned that he was looking forward to going back to Hogwarts, but then he also was really happy at the Burrow. And I thought that was really, really sweet. I just like how the Weasleys have taken him in and made him feel like part of their family. I think that's nice.
Of course. And they try to leave the house once, like Fred or George forgets their firecrackers or fireworks or whatever. Try to leave again. The other twin forgets his broomstick. Try to leave again. Almost make it to the highway. And Ginny screams for her diary.
I mean, this reminded me of any family trip that, like, thankfully it wasn't this chaotic, but, like, it reminded me of leaving. And then I think any trip, there's just, like, this moment of panic that I have had, like, oh, my God, I know I forgot X. And it didn't have to, you know, go back to the house and do this, but I definitely felt their pain. I'm guessing you're much more organized than I am when you travel, and because you've traveled like all over the place, so you kind of have to be a little bit, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I try to be for the most part. The worst scenario was I left, you know, I locked the door, was walking out, rolling my super heavy suitcase, and like got out of the building finally and was walking down the street towards the shuttle, and I'm like, shit, I don't have my passport.
Yeah, you definitely need that. The places that you were going, so.
Yeah, and also, quite honestly, I would use my passport as my identification, even if it was domestic, just because I kind of have the feeling that just it was so fancy and official looking, that I'm like, I don't want anyone to give me any crap. They're going to get a legit passport and let me go by.
I think that is great. I have used my passport as well, but for like a lot sillier reasons. There's all these laws around the driver's license and there has to be X, Y, and Z. So the passport will take care of business for me. So
yeah. And especially, you know, just using your passport for employee authorization.
Okay.
Because there was one girl, we were at a summer program together, like working for an Arabic summer school. And I had my passport ready, you know, to prove, yeah, I'm capable of working. And the girl, another coworker was just like, oh, it's okay, I have my driver's license. And I'm like, that's not enough for employee authorization. Either a passport is enough, or you have to do a combo of your driver's license and your birth certificate. And she just, jeez. And she was screwed.
Ugh. Yeah. What a bummer.
She had to do all sorts of crazy stuff to get her mom to bring the birth certificate. It was crazy. And I'm just like, use the passport.
Yeah. The passport's the way to go. Well, in there isn't any like documentation conversation here, but one question that I had our last conversation was, how was the car flying without being seen? And apparently, I think you mentioned this too, there is an invisibility booster installed in the car. So thank goodness for that.
And because they're running late, Arthur's like, you know, we can use it. Like, it'll just blur me 10 minutes. And Molly's just like, no.
Not in broad daylight, right?
Yeah. Again, I feel bad for Molly. I feel like Arthur is just another kid to manage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure he's responsible in other spheres, but when it comes to like his little muggle toys, like again, he reverts back to kid at Christmas.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that I think we mentioned in our Slitherclaws. I said that right, right?
Yeah.
Scholarly Slitherclaws. The gender roles in the book. And I think the Weasleys, there's kind of a little bit of, what am I trying to say? Like, Mrs. Weasley definitely does a lot of like the maternal, stereotypical maternal things. And I'm sure she is stressed the hell out. So I'm sure Arthur, you know, she probably wishes she had a little bit more of a partner in rounding these kids up. But exactly, you're exactly right. He's kind of a kid himself. So, well, so then we're getting to the platform, and all of the kids make it through with the exception of Ron and Harry. And I think Ron doesn't make it through simply because he's trying to go through with Harry.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly explain why or like who started it. Again, like this has never sort of happened before where both of them, the passageway just seals and now it's like a normal brick wall.
How awful. I mean, like, first of all, I think Harry almost gets like the wind knocked out of him. And then poor Hedwig is like flying all around on the ground.
Well, she's in her cage and everyone around them is like, what the hell is this kid doing with an endangered owl? Which again, why didn't they just release Hedwig and let her fly to Hogwarts? She knows where to go. She doesn't need to be with Harry at the train station.
That is an excellent point. I guess maybe he has like an attachment to
Like, unless they were gonna, like, bond over licorice wands and chocolate frog cards with Hedwig, and if she can eat all that crap and not get sick, maybe.
Maybe. That's a good point, though. I'm also, like, imagining being in a train station and seeing some, like, little messy-haired kid try to ram his, like, cart into a wall and then flying backward. Be like, what the hell? I mean, usually, you know, that's not the case, but obviously this is the case this time. So this is all telling us that, you know, something's going on because everybody made it through with the exception of Ron and Harry. And then they come to the grand idea to take their father's car to get to
Hogwarts. Because like they count the seconds and they know immediately at 11 a.m. that the train will have left. You know, a lot of people criticize the sheer absurdity of this. And even when I was younger, as a teenager, I would criticize the absurdity of this. But as I get older, I appreciate more that, yeah, kids are crazy.
Kids are crazy. And I think that's what I had to remind myself is like, this is kid logic, not adult logic. Like, they're just trying, they're like, oh, you know what would be cool? Like, in the back of their mind, they're like, oh, let's impress our friends and fly this car, but also we don't want to get in trouble because we're not on the train, which I just have a lot of questions about that whole process a little bit. Like, I guess people just thought Harry decided like, ah, screw it, I'm not going to go to Hogwarts this year. I kind of doubt that was the case.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we talked about it a little in another episode, you know, again, the kid logic of the worst thing of us being in trouble, like the worst thing of this is us not to get to school on time and get in really big trouble because we're not at school. And again, just right. this very narrow view of like what danger they don't like. They think the worst thing is not being at school on time, not thinking that we can gonna fly a car. We're underage for muggles. We're underage for wizards. And we're gonna fly this car and muggles will positively see us. Like, that's not the worst thing. Not being at school on time is the worst thing.
I guess like as a kid, you're kind of like, that is kind of the extent of it. It's like, it's, you don't really kind of think about how you get there or whatever. You're just like, I'm supposed to be at school at 9, so I will be at school at 9. And it's like,
And I would have all parents please consider that, again, you want your kids to be responsible and punctual and reliable and all that things, but do not enforce that to the point that they are so desperate to quote unquote follow the rules that they go to extreme measures to try and accomplish some certain task or be wherever just because, you know, you've instilled in them that if that doesn't happen, you're going to be in big trouble.
Right. Yeah. Let's use some good logic and reasoning these things. So
they fire up the car and drive away. And it turns out the invisibility booster is faulty. So they have to go like raise altitude and go into the clouds.
I love this. Like first of all, it seems like part of this seems a little tedious because I can imagine at first it's like pretty amazing. You're above the clouds and everything's awesome. And also you're like eating all this toffee apparently. But then, you know, eventually as they're making their way through the clouds, it gets hot and Harry's glasses are falling off and they're just kind of over it. And I feel like, I mean, that's how I feel about any car trip. I don't.
Yeah. Any road trip.
Yes. That, I like seeing different parts of this country, but like, I wish I could get there, you know, not by a car, but that's fine. Some people are into that. And also during a pandemic, that might be a better way to travel. But I just, thought it was very kind of the monotony of the travel. Like at first there's excitement and then they're just kind of like, all right, let's just get to freaking Hogwarts and get on with it a little bit.
Yeah. Again, having to raise your altitude, like the only thing that made me think of was I was once on a airplane where the turbulence was so horrendous and so bad that, you know, we were at normal like cruising like altitude and the pilot had to descend.
Oh my God.
Lower than what is typically normal travel just because the turbulence was that bad.
I probably would have, I don't know what I would have done. That's very scary.
Yeah, I was more like you and my husband both because my husband just hates flying.
Oh yeah.
He doesn't have control of everything and he hates turbulences. And I'm like, and he's like, there's nothing for you to be standing on. You're not on the ground. And I'm like, you are standing on the fundamentals of aerophysics. That did not comfort him.
I'm sure in the moment it was very, very scary. It's very scary.
Yeah. And I just like compartmentalize it and be like, just because it feels really uncomfy and scary, that doesn't mean that the airplane is faulty. It's just wind. Like I've internalized turbulence as just normal, like unpleasantness, not that it's an indication that the engine's on fire or something.
That is very, I like the logic and the reasoning versus what I go to, which is like, oh my God, this is the end and freaking out. But that's just kind of the way I operate in life, which is pretty stressful. So, well, eventually they make their way. I mean, nothing really exciting, I don't think, happens other than flying to the, you know, seeing the Hogwarts castle from up high, which does have to be pretty cool. But then the car,
the engine does catch fire, or rather, it just stops.
The engine stops, yes, and then they crash into a tree.
Yes, they crash into a tree, and not just any tree. They crash into the tree that is known as, well, first of all, they almost ran headfirst into the wall.
Yes.
And only missed the castle wall by a few inches.
Oh my God, that would have gone over well.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like, makes me, well, it's not funny, but just them, you know, driving into the wall of the Great Hall where everyone's eating.
That, I mean, it is kind of funny.
it made me think of, there's, I don't know how many years ago it is, but there is a video, like a security camera of this car drove into a veterinary office.
Oh no.
And they were like, and I was like, by the grace of God, the receptionist was like alive and uninjured.
Oh, thank, as long as all the critters were okay.
And then the dogs that were, you know, in the front office, you know, were okay too. But yeah, it was just crazy.
Ugh. Well, that's very scary. And, I was going to say, like, I guess in my, the reason I'm laughing is I wasn't imagining any, like, students got, that wasn't like imagining the kid in the sorting hat thing just got knocked over. That it was just like, though I'm, think that's funny, but
yeah,
but yes, so the Whomping Willow,
which aptly named because it starts beating the shit out of them.
Yes, so I have heard of a Weeping Willow, and I think they are very beautiful. A Whomping Willow sounds pretty terrifying.
Yeah, and a willow is actually my sign in the Celtic tree zodiac.
I figured you would have some like interesting willow information on in this chapter, because I just don't know why they went. They were like, you know what, a willow is, that's where we're gonna go.
Well, I think it's in a way it's sort of subversion of the typical like tranquil, you know, peaceful psychic connotations with the weeping willow, and now it's more like I'm gonna beat the crap out of you.
And that it does. It really,
until they get the sense to like go in reverse and, you know, right, fly away.
Right. And then the car drives off from them.
Yeah, the car, right, has had enough and just, it seems to be sentient in some fashion.
Yeah, that surprised me. I was like, it was like Christine from like Stephen King all of a sudden. I didn't know what was going on here, but he was like, I've had enough of you jokers, and drove away.
Yeah, like ejects them from the car, throws out their suitcases, and throws out Hedwig's cage. And it's like, again, even in the car, why could not Harry release Hedwig and let her fly next to the car?
She probably would have been thrilled. Hedwig.
Like, let her out, you know, in the first car ride from the Dursleys to the Weasleys.
I guess there's, like, I don't know, that maybe he just felt,
again, I guess,
like,
they're just in, again, panic mode, gotta get to school, not thinking
about
it.
I guess, which reminds me of something, Dr. Oh my gosh, work. McGonagall says to them.
You would like to refer to McGonagall as doctor.
I work with doctors all day long, so I have to refer to them as doctors.
Do you have a Dr. McGonagall?
I have a Dr. McConnell, so okay. It's pretty close.
Okay, now you're forgiven then.
All right. Yeah.
And yeah, the car just drives off into the forest.
Yeah, so they're like, first of all, they're beat up, but then they're pretty bummed because the feast already started and they're basically missing it. But then they're kind of like peeking in to just kind of see what's going on and watching the sorting hat ceremony. And then they notice somebody is not there. And then they do what every like gossipy person's worst nightmare is start talking some smack on good old Severus Snape.
Ah, yes. And where is this spot?
I'm on 78.
Yeah. Maybe he's left, said Harry, because he missed out on the defense against the Dark Arts job again. Or maybe he's been sacked, said Ron enthusiastically. I mean, everyone hates them. Or maybe, said a cold voice right behind him, he's waiting to hear why you two didn't arrive on the school train.
I'm surprised they both didn't pee their pants here, because that had to be terrifying.
Indeed. And so literally he's just like, follow me, and like drags them down to his dungeon. Not his sex dungeon, because this is not 50 Shades of Snape.
I know. No, I'm sure that exists somewhere, but yes, just his good old fashioned, creepy, old school dungeon with jars of things flying all around, floating around.
In green liquid.
Yeah. That brings me back to a memory that is not related. I was part of a haunted house and I played a mad doctor. So I had things in formaldehyde and somebody dropped a giant grasshopper. It was very smelly. Anyway, the little jar broke. But so they basically get busted. And then we also learn that the muggles saw the flying car.
Yeah. Flying Ford Anglia mystifies muggles.
Ooh.
So overall, 7 muggles saw them. Yeah, because again, they're like, they had to like drop below the cloud line just to see where the train was going.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm not sure if what magic, you know, has Hogwarts under, whether it can be found if you're not following the Hogwarts train. But yeah, basically from London, it was due north. So it's obviously in Scotland somewhere.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I had a, this is naive Harry Potter person question. Something that's a little confusing to me is, so we have some of these kids that whose parents, basically the overlap of the Muggle and wizarding worlds. And, you know, like Hermione's parents are dentists and the Weasleys are taking their kids to the train station in London. So I guess maybe I'm just like overwhelmed or confused by the overlap, or maybe I'm just not supposed to think too deep into that.
Like just, yeah, well, in what, like the overlap in what way?
So I was thinking, so like if these 7 muggles were like, what if 2 of them were Hermione's parents, let's say, they would have been like, eh, some weird magic shit and probably moved on with their lives or something. Yeah. That's just something that I guess I'm maybe we'll learn more, but
yeah, we talked, you know, about it a little bit, even like, I think maybe even the first or second episode of Philosopher's Stone. I think the idea is that the ratio of wizards is so, so low compared to muggles, like maybe 10, if not 5%, that makes the extended like muggle families, or at least muggles who are aware of magic, you know, very small too.
Okay.
So the chances of a muggle like a muggle like Hermione's parents seeing this and being like, whatever, you know, is much lower than the normal muggle who has absolutely no clue.
Okay. I think, I guess, like, I need some, I should have asked Harry for some like statistics on population density and things like that. I'm kidding. But so, I mean, but that is obviously a big, big deal and not a good deal, because you also are thinking about Ron's dad, and that's not Ron's car. It's his dad's car. What is his dad's job again?
He works at the Office for Improper Use of Muggle Artifacts.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So like, this is not just Ron acted like an idiot. This is like Ron may have caused his father to lose his job type
situation. Yeah. Or yeah. Yeah. Because technically there is a loophole in that it's not illegal for Arthur to possess the car. But to possess it and, you know, combined with this stupid thing that Ron did, that is a problem.
Right. Right. So bad decision making, right, is what is being demonstrated right now.
Yeah. And again, Snape just snaping it up all over the place.
Yeah, he doesn't really have a lot of sympathy for them. He has more compassion for the Whomping Willow. So...
And so, and you know what? Screw that. Is Snape now a tree-hugging environmentalist activist? Fuck no.
No, I think he's just like, he's happy that it beat up the kids, I guess. I don't know.
And I was especially miffed by, you know, they tried to, again, what they did was extremely stupid, but no attention with Snape or with McGonagall or with Dumbledore, no attention whatsoever is given to the fact that why was the barrier sealed?
Right. I wondered that as well. And he's mentioned it, right? He has said, like, we couldn't get through the gate. And it's kind of like, why did you fly the car? Not like, wait a minute. What? So, yeah, that's a little strange.
Yeah, and Snape is like, most unfortunately, you are not in my house, and the decision to expel you does not rest with me. I shall go fetch the people who do have that happy power. You will wait here.
Harry would have been gone last year if Snape had the power to expel him. I'm like, good, he would have found some reason.
Yeah,
so.
It's, and especially, you know, people criticize, you know, the notion of Harry Potter romanticizing boarding school life. But in this specific fact that the kids are magical, and again, they haven't, you know, mastered the power within themselves yet. And so naturally, situations like this, this is an extreme case, but situations like this are going to happen. So it makes sense why you hide them away in the highlands of Scotland in a castle no one knows about.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because how many times did Harry in book one, you know, with living with the Dursleys, we found out that he would do things and he was like, I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I'm sure that's happened to all these kids before. And especially when they do have that little bit of additional knowledge.
Yeah. And so McGonagall's not happy either. And she's just like, sit, explain now.
Yeah.
And yeah. And oh, so she's like, and you didn't send an owl because?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny because then it's this like, oh, like that they didn't even think of that in the moment. And I'm sure like in your panicked moment, but that would have been the best way to go about things, I guess. Maybe they would have been hanging around the train station for a while, but who cares?
Well, again, it's just the mysterious nature of the barrier. Would Mr. and Mrs. Weasley been able to return to them?
Hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a good question, too.
We know nothing of the nature of how the barrier was sealed, who specifically it was trying to block, or how many people it would be willing to block, or what. We don't know any of that.
We don't know any of that. And I'm going to assume it has something to do with the warning Dobby gave. So that's the assumption I'm running under right now.
Okay, make note of that.
I feel like I might be wrong. But okay.
Yeah. And then Dumbledore comes in. And of course, it's the typical being, you know, the disappointment, right? Someone you respect is so much worse than, you know, being yelled at from someone like Snape.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And probably more effective. And I think I may have, maybe it's just something I think about a lot, but the editor in chief and at Vogue, Anna Wintour, always says like she doesn't yell because she doesn't have to. It's like, oh, yeah, there's some power in that. And there's obviously some power. And, you know, I think Harry also admires and respects Dumbledore. And he's just kind of like, oh, man. And that's got to be a gut punch for Harry. So maybe he won't get in a flying car again. Like, just don't do that again.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, like, what is the limit to, like, getting expelled? Like, again, you know, sometimes, you know, the kids can't control themselves. So if you like expel a kid at a young age before he can control himself and he's not allowed to use magic, at least with a wand, but then you send him out into the world and he can't do anything with his magic, that just creates further problems. So that just makes me think of what's the limit in general for, you know, how badly do you have to screw up to get expelled from Hogwarts at a young age to trump all of those, like, you know, counterpoints I just made. And is Harry getting special treatment because he's the boy savior and we don't want him wandering on his own, so it's better for him to be in the castle?
That's a great question, and I kind of wondered that myself. Because, I mean, all the instances that Harry and Ron and Hermione, but let's just go with Harry for now, have been involved in have been pretty extreme, like, and you would think at a wizarding school. But I guess they haven't been maliciously intended. So my thought right now is they were stupid and they made a bad decision, but it wasn't, you know, like it wasn't like a
whatever.
Right. It wasn't like Malfoy, like, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to trick Harry to get into the Whomping Willow so it like kicks his ass. I mean, I don't know if that would get him kicked out either, but that's my only rationalization at this point.
Yeah. And even Ron, again, also makes me think of what constitutes like an emergency for an underage wizard, because Ron in his panicked logic is like, we are allowed to do this because we are underage wizards and we need to get to school. And therefore, this is okay, you know,
I mean,
for us to do. So what? So just out of curiosity, within this section 19 or whatever, what constitutes an emergency? You know, my understanding was that the emergency is my life or my bodily well-being is in imminent danger.
That would make sense. This sure, like, God knows at this point is how I feel. Because we're talking about bodily harm, and that seems to be something that's easily remedied in the wizarding world. So, great question. I don't know.
Yep, I'm unclear either. So Snape looked as though Christmas had been canceled when he finds out that McGonagall is not going to expel them.
Yeah, sorry, Snape. Get over it, man. Go eat your little feast and some delicious custard tart that
Dumbledore was pushing on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and they can't join. You know, it's just interesting, you know, Snape's perception of Harry, because again, you know, the whole, oh, we're so badass, we're flying in this car, this was an afterthought. And yes, it went through their minds partially while they were doing it, and they get recognition for it from their peers. But again, they would not have done this if, again, the barrier had been open to them. They wouldn't have come up with that on their own. But Snape is just thinking, you know, they just did this for shits and giggles.
Right. Snape is not thinking at their level, I guess. Obviously, there's something going on with Snape. There's a bug up his ass, so to speak, that I don't know about fully yet.
We know that him and Harry's father had this sort of like rivalry, as Dumbledore put it, not unlike, you know, the one Harry has with Draco.
Right.
So if Snape perceived Harry's father, James, as being someone who would engage in this behavior for just the hell of it, then he's shoving that onto Harry.
Yeah, so he's just kind of like thinking it's, I guess, this would be a nature situation where it was just a trait that he was kind of born with, this rebellious, or whatever, to piss off Snape. I guess that's what his inherited trait. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, they only get sandwiches because Professor McGonagall does not want to indulge them by have them dramatically, you know, enter the Great Hall late because they flew in the car and everything. So she makes them eat their little sandwiches in the dark and dreary dungeon.
Now that's some logical good thinking, because what we find out when they get to the common room is all the people are pretty psyched about the way they got to Hogwarts.
Again, and McGonagall is much more obviously level-headed than Snape, where she can see that this was just really dumb. But this wasn't, right, like, arrogance-driven. Like, but she's smart enough to be like, I'm not going to feed into this any more than I have to. So you're going to sit here in the dungeon and eat your sandwiches?
Smart thinking. Smart lady who's been an educator for a while, probably.
Yeah. Well, I think over 30 years by this point.
She knows what she's doing then.
Yeah, because I think she's, like, in her 50s by now. Because she taught Harry's parents. She taught Snape, too.
Well, then there we go. That makes sense. She kind of knows what's going on, and Snape is still a little newer to the game, I would say.
Indeed. And even Ron is able to say it, like, she didn't want us showing off, said Ron sagely. Again, Ron's not stupid.
No,
would show it more.
Yeah, he's just kind of like, he's almost kind of okay for a while, just kind of letting Harry be the, you know, the center of the tension. Not that I think their relationship is competitive, like he's not trying to steal the spotlight at this time, but he's just kind of comfortable taking a step back, it seems.
Yeah. And then finally they head up to Gryffindor Tower and they do come across Hermione, and Hermione's very disappointed as well.
I mean, did we expect anything less from Hermione?
I certainly didn't.
No, she's, I like how it kind of follows her kind of, she obviously is disappointed, especially because they broke some major rules and they almost got killed. So, you know, yep. I would be upset too.
Yep. And then McGonagall is just like, you know, Ron or Harry puts forth to McGonagall that, oh, technically term didn't start, so you don't need to take points away, do you? And she doesn't.
I remember that. I'm glad you talked about that, because I thought, of course McGonagall's not going to take points away, because it's, I guess I also thought it was funny that that's one of the first things that Harry mentions is like, okay, so you didn't expel us. Now don't take any points away from Gryffindor. It's kind of like, that's really but that makes sense. That's what would be on a kid's mind. They don't want
to. Well, to me, I think this is proper, you know, reasoning, because she took away 150 points last year and they couldn't tell her the truth that we were getting rid of Hagrid's dumb dragon.
Yeah, even though it's still a little suspect that, well, we think Dumbledore knew about the whole dragon.
Yeah, and again, situation. And McGonagall may have known, but we're not sure. Again, I'm 50-50 on McGonagall knowing.
Yeah.
We don't. Yeah. So yeah, all the boys in their year go in the dormitory and they're like, unbelievable, cool, amazing. And that concludes chapter 5.
Boys doing some dumb shit, almost dying, and then they're okay. Story of male childhood.
Indeed. Chapter 6, Gilderoy Lockhart.
I said, speaking of some male issues, yes. Gilderoy Lockhart.
The next day, however, Harry barely grinned once. Things started to go downfall from breakfast in the Great Hall. So what causes their smug satisfaction of being badass with the car is Ron receives a howler.
Yes. I had some questions about the howler. I knew it wasn't going to be a good thing, but I kind of, well, go ahead and then I'll ask my questions. Sorry.
Well, just when I revisited this, rereading this again with the howler, and understand, I can, of course, Molly Weasley has every right to be angry and disappointed, but I'm just thinking, you know, how effective is humiliation as punishment for teenagers?
Well, you know, not only that, but I was kind of like, you're putting like your whole family on blast in front of like the entire school. Like, I thought there was some element of like, we didn't really want to acknowledge too much that this was going on. I thought your father would die. I'm not going to scream it because my husband is working the other room, but it's a letter from Dumbledore. Last night, I thought your father would die of shame. We didn't bring you up to behave like this. This is what the thing is like yelling at Ron and kind of Harry, but like, you know, just a little bit. I don't know about the, I'm sure like he obviously is a little, feels bad about this, but I don't know. I thought that was kind of like, weird.
In terms of putting your whole family business on blast, I think it must be at the point where, again, facing an inquiry at work, that it's already on land blast and therefore she feels she has nothing left to lose.
I guess so. I guess I just...
Again, because it's already been on the front page of the newspaper.
Oh, yeah. I just wouldn't want to add any more fuel to the fire, but maybe that's
just me. And I'm just personally not into... Again, humiliation as a means of punishment or a means of trying to correct behavior or negative reinforcement and all of those things.
Yeah, I don't...
You know, it made me think of... Again, they were really stupid, of course, but, you know, sometimes I would get frustrated with my parents, like, if I did something, again, that wasn't maliciously intended and just something... bad or like embarrassing happened, like, and if it was again like this where if possibly I could have been hurt, or like the question is, oh, are you okay, is every like you're not like your arm's not broken, is it? Instead it's just about the embarrassment factor.
Yeah I feel like being a kid is humiliating constantly, so like we don't really need to add to it. I also just want to tell everybody I'm not a parent and I'm not planning on being a parent, so I don't really know.
Not going to be for several years, if ever, for me as well. And, what was I going to say? Oh, I wanted to ask you if you felt comfortable in sharing. What do you think was one of the things you did as a kid that, if they had the ability to do so, that your parents would have sent a howler?
Oh, God. Man, I don't know. Do you have one?
No, I have one. So basically what happened is, you know, my house was a two-story building, you know, and we had a balcony on the second floor. And so my parents were, I don't know why we were at home. I guess it was summertime. Yeah, definitely summer. And so my parents were at work, and my sister and I, she's 4 years older than me. So we look outside, and it's not like right across the street, but like way, way beyond, we see one of the houses is on fire.
Oh my God.
And so, you know, there's already fire, you know, trucks like going down the road and everything. And so we go to the balcony to go look at it. And we're like, oh, that's really crazy, you know, whatever. And our dog came out on the balcony with us. And we opened the door, we tried to get back in. We had locked ourselves out on the second floor balcony.
Oh no, that's awful.
In 100 degrees weather.
Ugh.
With our
How dog. Long were your parents gone? That sounds miserable.
Yeah, so we were screaming. Again, we just lived out in the boonies. So, like, I lived on 5 acres. So anyone who was even remotely near was acres away. And so we were just screaming for help because, again, it was super, super hot. We had no shade. The dog had no water. We had no water. And so finally someone heard us and came to us and got a ladder and, like, brought us water and stuff and, you know, called our parents. And my dad just came home, unlocked the door, like, said something or yelled something, and then just left. And again, because he was so mad. And I'm just like, you're not, like, happy that we didn't, like, die of dehydration?
That, I mean, like, yeah, I'd be worried about y'all. Oh, man.
Well, so if you think he was worried, he did not express it that way. It was just purely through anger. And I feel like that is the one thing my dad would have sent a howler because he was really pissed off.
That, I think it sounds like an honest mistake. But
I thought yeah. So, too. But yeah.
I'm on team Amy.
It wasn't even me. It was my sister who touched the door last. And she was older.
There we go. I would get it together, sister. I know she's coming on the pod in a while, so I got nothing but love. So don't hate on me, please.
Yeah. But anyway, howlers aside, what happens after the howler?
So then they're like, Hermione basically decides that they've been humiliated enough and she can kind of like start talking to them again. So that they had been punished long enough and she was perfectly fine being friendly again. And then they're on their way to Professor Sprout's class. But on their way, they meet the gross, disgusting, thinks he's awesome, Gilderoy Lockhart, who basically pulls Harry aside and is like, listen, man. You don't have to take a flying car to impress me. I know you got on the front page with me and now you're like addicted to fame, but chill. And I thought that was it was a testament to this man's character.
Wanted to ask you, do you think in his own twisted way, he's genuinely trying to mentor Harry, or is this purely even at his level, he's just thinking, I want to use this kid's fame for as much as I can?
I mean, okay, so I kind of, the person he reminds me a little bit is kind of like Donald Trump, because I read a news story a long time ago that Donald Trump was in the paper one time as a kid, and then he kind of got addicted to that feeling. And then the rest is history. But I just feel like there's something going on with Lockhart that I don't know about yet. I mean, the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers always kind of seem to be up to something. But I kind of like to think, especially based on this next encounter that we have with Lockhart and Harry, maybe there's a little iota of like, I want to help you out, but I think it's mostly self-serving. But I don't know that much yet.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. We'll get to the second interaction. But I was just noticing rereading this is that his first appearance in Diagon Alley, I believe his robes were periwinkle. And when they see him briefly in the Great Hall in the last chapter, his robes were aquamarine. And now his robes are turquoise.
This is very blue oriented.
Yeah, very fancy. Like, what's next? Going to be Cerulean?
Ooh.
Or Lapis? Or what?
He's, I don't know what the symbolism of blue is, because blue is usually a tranquil color and he's not very tranquil. I guess maybe it complements his eyes. Is that something that he said?
I think that's the reason behind it. I feel so bad for Professor Sprout. Professor Sprout is, she's the head of Hufflepuff House. She's always happy and cheery, but Harry notices that she's not so cheery because he's trying to, you know, Lockhart's trying to upstage her as she's trying to, you know, heal the Whomping Willow.
Oh, yeah. I didn't like that either. So just showing Professor Sprout the right way to Dr. Whomping Willow. But I don't want you running away with their idea that I'm better at herbology than she is. I just happen to have met several of these exotic plants on my travels. Like, dude, screw you. I feel bad for Sprout, too.
Yeah. Greenhouse 3 today, chap, said Professor Sprout. Yep. So I think I would really enjoy herbology as a subject.
I think I would, too. I've tried to do a little bit of, like, plant medicine and make a couple tinctures, but I have my medicinal herb garden that I haven't done a lot with and is kind of overgrown with columbine right now. Well, not right now, but it is when it's blooming. But I was going to ask you about some of this stuff, given your witch background, if there's any like herbal things that you get into.
Yeah. Again, as much as I say I would love herbology in terms of my own pagan practice, I don't do crap with herbs. Like, all my stuff is more crystal and astrology, celestial stuff.
Okay. I think you had mentioned that too before. I guess that, so one of the things that they do is, well, it's the main thing that they do today, which kind of asterisk again, putting kids in friggin' danger, is repotting mandrakes.
Yeah. And technically it's quote unquote safe because they're still babies. And so the screams won't kill you, but it may knock you out for a few hours.
I mean, you know, whatever. Let's just knock out some 12-year-olds.
I love this scene in the movie because the actress who plays Professor Sprout is a really funny Australian actress. And so she, it gets to a point where, you know, they get the mandrakes out and the actor who plays Neville, like, falls to the ground. And Professor Sprout is like, ugh, Longbottom's been neglecting his earmuffs. And Seamus is like, no, ma'am, he's just fainted. Yes, well, just leave him there.
Oh, poor Neville. Always Neville. I thought it was funny that they were putting on earmuffs because I was like, couldn't they like do a little spell? But maybe they can't.
I think the idea is that the earmuffs themselves are enchanted, so everything's dead silent.
Oh, cool. The first noise-canceling earmuffs. That's pretty exciting. I think it's funny that she was like, the pink fuzzy ones were the ones left behind and she, Professor Sprout, put them on. And then pulled out this little screen. Well, not little. It sounds pretty intense. Little mandrake that is screaming its head off. Now, I don't know a lot about mandrake root, but I think that is a actual thing. And they, if I remember right, they kind of look funny. Or maybe I'm just confusing the real world and the fantasy world. I don't know.
I think mandrakes, that term is used in some capacity. For what? I have no clue.
It is the root of a plant historically derived from, okay. Well, there looks to be some information on mandrakes should you choose to go that route. but I don't think you pull them out of a pot and they scream, but be my guest to find out.
Yeah, they've got their herbology class. And then we get a brief summary of Professor McGonagall's class, which of course only Hermione can do what they've been asked by the end of the lesson. And so then next we get Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yeah, with Professor Gilderoy Lockhart and probably the best quiz ever given at Hogwarts.
Yeah, and then Ron's like, why, demand Ron, have you outlined all of Lockhart's lessons in little hearts?
Oh, yeah. Poor Hermione.
Okay. I want to give Hermione a little bit of slack. Like, I like to think, again, Hermione is someone who likes to be intellectually stimulated. For her to have this sort of, like, schoolgirl crush on Lockhart, despite what has been shown to us about Lockhart, I would have to wager, like, in my headcanon, Lockhart must have a really, really good ghostwriter.
That is exactly what I was going to say, too, because
to wade through Lockhart's BS to just stick to like the academic portion of Lockhart's accomplishments.
Yeah. And I think we're giving Hermione some credit because sure, she's like they're about 12, I think, at this point. And she's got a little crush on him. But she's also like, it's not just because of his looks. It's because of his intellect, because of the books he's supposedly written. And you're exactly right. I would like to know who the ghostwriter is on these books because it seems pretty obvious given their first class with him. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
No, he doesn't. But before Defense Against Dark Arts begin, we get this little interaction with Colin Creevy. And I personally have a real soft spot for Colin because I don't think Colin was trying to be like, you know, super like suck up to Harry because of his fame. I think he views Harry... he's muggle-born, so this is all new to him. So I think he just sees Harry as just another element of Hogwarts, of this whole new world that he wants to take pictures for his dad.
That's kind of sweet. I think, is he kind of like the journalist eventually or something? Like,
does the Hogwarts have a school newspaper? I don't know.
I don't know. I just kind of, that's who I kind of imagined him as. But it seemed pretty harmless. And then, of course, Lockhart had
Draco comes in.
Yeah, of course. And then, of course, there's always a dig about the freaking Weasley's money, which drives me absolutely crazy.
Everyone line up. Malfoy roared to the crowd. Harry Potter is giving out signed photos. You're just jealous, piped up Colin, whose entire body was about as thick as Crab's neck. And again, Draco's so salty about Harry's fame. Second time we've come across this, or third, if you count two in one day at Diagon Alley.
He's, and then Ron tells him to eat slugs, which is gross, but he really has a bee in his bonnet about Harry's fame, and
which I think is a completely subconscious like projection, because in a way Harry and Draco are in similar positions where their wealth slash fame is rooted in something absolutely not unmerit based.
Talk a little bit more about that.
Draco's from a prominent family. Draco did nothing to quote unquote earn his wealth, and likewise Harry, just by happenstance, ended up with all this fame. And so they're both in these positions where neither is merit-based, and yet Draco thinks it's, like, okay for him to have some sort of social capital that's not merit-based, but it's not okay for Harry to have the same thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to rationalize Malfoy's thinking, and I can't, because he's just, it's like Harry has the things that Draco has, but, you know, Draco doesn't get the kind of positive attention. Because it sounds like, thus far, Draco's, like, little crew of friends and involve, like, two people, Crabbe and Goyle, and then that's pretty much the extent of it. I don't see people,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, we don't know how popular, really, Draco is, and he's still pretty, like, young, so even probably the older Slytherins, like, oh, this little pipsqueak.
Right. He seems kind of like a pain in the ass. I don't know. I'm just trying to think about kids when I was in school and people that acted like Malfoy. And then they picked on me because I was quiet. So that's a fun memory.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, again, I don't think Colin was trying to be, like, mean or, like, you know, presume things about Harry. But because, of course, it's about his hobby, it just happens to be photography, Lockhart comes swooping in and is just like, oh, what does he say? Let me just say that handing out signed pictures at this stage of your career isn't sensible. Looks a tad big-headed, Harry, to be frank. There may well come a time where, like me, you'll need to keep a stack handy wherever you go, but, he gave a little shorter, I don't think you're quite there yet. So, you took the position that from this interaction, in his own delusional way, Lockhart's trying to genuinely be a mentor, but I interpreted this second interaction as proof that, okay, this isn't about his delusional mentorship. He doesn't want Harry to upstage him.
This one, definitely, I think that comes through, especially when he's talking about Harry's career. I was like, what are you talking about? Harry hasn't done anything to, like, push his career other than, I guess, play Quidditch. I don't know. But this is definitely Gilderoy Lockhart. I have to say his full name the whole time. Yeah, it seems ill-intended. More over the last time. I guess the first encounter, it's kind of like, okay, maybe he's trying to help him out, but this is a little more intense.
Although even in the first interaction, it's like, I was used to be a nobody just like you, when in reality we all know that Harry isn't a nobody.
He's never been a never been. Exactly.
He kind of slipped up a little there, but then I think he just really, you know, plays his hand with, again, this little interaction.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on with this Joker, so.
Yep. Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, third class, honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League, and five-time winner of Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award. But I don't talk about that. I didn't get rid of the Band and Banshee by smiling at her.
And I love that he waited for people to laugh and people are like,
And including a ghostwriter, who is his publicist that he got to be on the Dark Force Defense League?
I don't know. This man has very good people around him. Also, he's very braggadocious, which I feel like anybody that introduced themselves to a group of children with these things, who they probably are like, I guess I know what that means. But the 5-time winner of Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award, I'm comparing that to like People magazine's like Hottest Person of the Year or something. I guess that's kind of the same thing.
Right.
He has good people around him. He is very, very full of himself. I think that's an understatement.
Yeah, seriously, I want his ghostwriter. I want his publicist. I want his agent. I want everyone. I want to hire everyone he's got.
He's a successful person. That's for sure. That's for sure. That's when they give him, and then he gives out this test, which is basically, they give some examples of the questions. They don't go through all the questions, but what is Gilderoy Lockhart's favorite color? What is Gilderoy Lockhart's secret ambition? What, in your opinion, is Gilderoy Lockhart's greatest achievement to date? When is Gilderoy Lockhart's birthday? And what would be his ideal gift? Can you imagine a professor handing you a quiz that's basically, tell me all the cool things about me?
Not directly, but again, when you have professors in real life who only give you their published books as the reading for a class.
Kind of similar, right?
Like, yeah. It's even though they may ask technically academic questions, it's all about what do I think about blah, blah, blah.
Yes. I'm glad to never have had a professor on this level. We talked about the people issuing their own book, which I always thought, it's a little weird, but thankfully never to this extreme.
Yeah. But Miss Hermione Granger knew my secret ambition is to rid the world of evil and market my own range of hair care potions.
I mean, go big or go home. And poor Hermione, and it's just embarrassed as hell.
And it's just funny, range of hair care potions, because that's exactly what Harry's grandparent like made a lot of money with.
Oh, that's an interesting connection there.
Again, deep Potter trivia, not specifically in the books, but...
Okay, good, because I was like, oh shoot, where did I miss that?
No, you didn't miss it. And so Lockhart has this cage, and it's rattling, and he reveals it to be a bunch of Cornish pixies. And I'm all for practical learning, or learning on the job, but you gotta give them a little something first.
Right, right. You don't just free a bunch of pixies who have shrill voices, and then they're just wreaking havoc on the class. And he doesn't know what the hell to do about them. He's just
one of them throws his wand out the window.
I thought that was pretty funny. I would have.
And two of them grab Neville and hang him from the chandelier.
So this is like a little rambunctious little creature. I mean, I don't know a lot about pixies, but... Or if their relation to other...
I think it's just funny creatures. That of all the kids, it's Seamus who actually is the one who, like, recognizes the pixies and, like, laughs that these are, quote-unquote, dangers. And it's just funny because Seamus is the Irish one, pixies and fairies, all that fairy lore.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That's where that derived from. I don't know a lot about that lore. I know that is, if I'm correct, that is a prevalent... thing in A Court of Thorns and Roses, right? The Fae?
Yeah. Okay. It's basically Fae, Fairy, 50 Shades of Grey.
All right. I'm ready for that podcast.
So the pixies hoist Neville, drag him to the chandelier, and even it breaks and Neville comes crashing down. Lockhart's wand gets thrown out the window, complete mayhem. And he's just like, you know, you three, you can tidy them back up in their cage. Can you believe him? Roared Ron as one of the remaining pixies bit him painfully on the ear. He just wants to give us some hands-on experience, said Hermione, immobilizing two pixies at once with a clever freezing charm and stuffing them back into their cage. Hands-on, said Harry, who was trying to grab a pixie dancing out of reach with its tongue out. Hermione, he didn't have a clue what he was doing. Rubbish, said Hermione. You've read his books. Look at all the amazing things he's done. He says he's done, Ron muttered.
Yeah. So how did Hermione know how to handle these pixies? Because obviously, I feel like it's always like Hermione shows up and things are going to be all right.
I don't think she necessarily knew. She's just like, okay, we need them to stop. And so I need to immobilize them in some fashion.
Smart gal. As usual, Hermione's figuring it out using kind of like some of her own level-headedness. So good for her. But yeah, then we have an indication that even the kids realize that this guy probably didn't really write all the things he apparently said he did.
Yeah, but it's just weird. If he didn't write them, then how could he, like, get the fame that he does get, or, you know, be on these committees and all these things?
I don't know. I feel like we're gonna find out, though, through our journey through the Chamber of Secrets here. I know that this guy is up to something, but I don't know what yet.
He's the defense against the Dark Arts teacher. They're always up to something.
They are always up to something. I think that should be my biggest takeaway from book two. I mean, I feel like, I don't know how prevalent that is throughout the rest of the series, but I'm guessing it's prevalent, so.
Yep. Alrighty then. So now we can move into Gothic Geek Out. So, what did you think of Gothic elements within these chapters?
You know, the Snape's office in the dungeon, that to me was the most Gothic element. And then I guess some of the herbal things, you know, the plant that can kill you with a scream, and just plants that are poisonous. I'm not sure how often that shows up in like a Gothic literature, but I feel like somebody's poison. Oh my God, you're exactly right. I feel like people are poisoning people somehow when there's some sort of weird plant. It just made me think of this garden. I think it's in England, of poisonous.
Oh, it's just like plants. Oh, I've heard of that garden. I want to go to it, but literally you have to like wear a mask in certain places because just being like in the close proximity to some of those like shrubs, you'll just like drop dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw the guy that like tends it. He's got like a full hazmat suit on, which is pretty intense, but also pretty cool. Better. So yeah. So those were kind of the, you know, the flying car, the Whomping Willow, Lockhart, I guess, I don't know. I didn't see a lot. So I feel like I'm going with something we've already done before with Snape's dungeon, but whatever. Yeah. It's still kind of Gothic. What about you?
I would say Whomping Willow. Just okay. Because it's a sort of, certainly not the first time we will see a menacing plant or a haunted forest. So I think for me, of the plant stuff, Whomping Will was the big one, obviously. But of course, more so than that, just Snape himself.
The Gothic King, Snape.
Yes, the King of Gothic emo incels.
Awesome. Well, I love how you describe him.
Because he's, and again, it's just like, he just fulfills all those creepy, like, behind your back waiting for you.
Yes. Yeah. That is a little creepy. Not just a little creepy. It's pretty creepy.
So, but yeah. But other than that, you're right. Not a great deal of Gothic stuff in these few bits. Because, again, Lockhart's just way too cheery.
He is. He's definitely, I mean, you know that there's something underneath that like facade, but he's not like your traditional Gothic, like, you know, Heathcliff or anybody like that, Mr. Rochester.
Certainly not. Yeah, did I have any more notes on Lockhart? Well, the one thing more I wanted to say about Lockhart is through his interactions with Harry, I thought a lot about how we force certain presumptions onto celebrities that we think they are like Lockhart, who are power hungry and, you know, constantly need the limelight to feel better about themselves. Like, they can't possibly be like Harry, who, whether it was for merit or not, just see it as something they have to put up with.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that, you know, like with some social media in the social media world, I guess that kind of has been dispelled a little bit. You have people like, to me, that's been the big, I don't know, defining line, because there are celebrities that are all over social media all the time. And then there are those that just kind of do their thing and then go about their business, and they're not really looking for the accolade or the notoriety like Lockhart is. They're just kind of like, I just want to do this work that I enjoy.
Yeah, I think through social media, one of the celebrities that I think is really down to earth and I really like just the normal post is Lena Headey, who, you know, played Cersei Lannister.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, she seems like will character. So often post pictures of herself with like no makeup at all and just normal stuff. And she had a picture that a magazine had of her like riding a motorbike, and she was just like, can you please stop camping out in front of my house? It's annoying.
Ugh, I can't even imagine like living like that. But
anyway, yeah, I just felt bad because, again, we think also like through our own like jealousies or inadequacies, we all think celebrities are like Lockhart, but a lot of them aren't.
Yeah, a lot of them just want to do their thing and go home. I respect
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Alrighty then. And now we move on to Tarot of the Day. So I've shuffled my tarot cards and the card I picked up is the Six of Swords.
All right.
The Six of Swords is, of course, a card in the Minor Arcana, which is divided between the four suits, the swords, the wands, the cups, and the pentacles. And the swords are the precursor to what we know in the playing cards as the spades.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Which makes sense because the spade in Spanish is espada, and espada is the Spanish word for sword.
Okay. Interesting. Good to know.
Six of Swords. Again, don't have this remembered, the meaning on top of my head. I know the Six of Cups is like childhood and nostalgia, but I don't remember what the Six of Swords. So let me just pull it up. Okay. The Six of Swords shows that you are in a state of transition, leaving behind what was familiar and moving towards the unknown. You might be moving house, leaving a relationship, changing jobs, going through a rite of passage, or a mental shift. The Six of Swords invites you to let go of whatever is holding you back, be it from your past or present circumstances. Instead, gaze ahead in your future. Similarly, the Six of Swords asks you to reflect on any emotional or mental baggage you may carry as you move from one phase to the next. And this whole notion of transition is reiterated because in a lot of tarot decks, this one that I'm using included, the primary symbol is like a boat.
Okay. I'm looking it up myself to just to familiarize myself.
Yeah. So what I get out of this, of course, it's appropriate that we pull this card in the huge transportation scene.
Oh, yeah. Talking about a transition from...
The transition and just a transition within that transition. Transitioning from one mode of transportation to the next.
Yeah. And then from being not an idiot to an idiot. I'm kidding. But like there is... I can understand the transition theme throughout there. I mean, just kind of the logical transportation of getting from the Muggle world back into the... Or the, you know... The non-Hogwarts world back to the Hogwarts world. In the transition for dark arts teachers, because the last dark arts teacher was Professor Quirrell, right? And then he's long gone. So,
he's dead.
Yeah. R.I.P. Not kind of. I don't know. Voldemort not really. Possessed you. That sucks. Yeah. You're kind of not a great person if you're letting that happen. So interesting. I'm trying to see if any, I'm looking at the keywords that I can, accepting lessons is one of the things that I see here with this.
Oh, well, they certainly accepted a big lesson. Don't fly flying cars that don't belong to you.
Right, right.
Or even if they do belong to you, don't do it.
Just follow the rules so you're not going to get your family in trouble, people. So I think that was a very applicable tarot card for couple chapters.
Alrighty then. Did you have any other thoughts?
I don't know. I enjoyed these chapters. I think Lockhart's an interesting character and, you know, to kind of encompass a lot of things, ego, different kinds of ways of hiding things from people in obvious and non-obvious ways. I think he's an interesting character and I'll be curious to see his evolution throughout the story.
Indeed. All right. And now we move on to fan fiction time.
Oh, yeah. I took an easy one, probably. I wanted to think about what if they didn't have a flying car, so they couldn't get onto the platform. They didn't have the flying car. Do we think that at that point they would have been like, you know what, let's send Hedwig off and, you know, get some responses? Or do you think they would have panicked and done something else stupid?
I think they would have panicked and taken the brooms.
Oh, man. That might have caused even more. Well, no, the flying car is pretty bad.
Yeah, the flying car is pretty bad. And again, smaller, less chance of probably being seen.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I guess they could have like magicked their stuff up with them too. I knew that one wasn't very exciting, but it would kind of like, I guess they wouldn't have had such a grand entrance. I wonder how much trouble they would have gotten in for flying their brooms rather than the car. The Whomping Willow probably would have been okay. But.
Yeah, so my scenario was, what if they flew the car but didn't get caught?
Ooh.
Like, my idea is yeah. What if they had been able to peacefully land the car, park it somewhere in the forest, and just show up?
Well, I guess the first thing is, like, they would have had to explain to Arthur where his car was, which I guess at least it was safe and they didn't cause a scene. Because they wouldn't have been seen. And then I feel like that would have been like, you know, when you get away with something, you want to like take it another step. Maybe they would have just been like flying that car all around or giving their friends rides. And then maybe they would have crashed into the Hogwarts castle. I don't know. But interesting.
Yeah, I like to think that if they had flown the car but not gotten caught, I feel like things would have still panned out is, you know, Snape would have been creeping up on them. They would have been forced to explain themselves. It just wouldn't have been the added public layer you know, the newspaper, and probably would have gotten detention, would have written to their families. But the only thing would be that Arthur would not be having to face the inquiry and the embarrassment at work.
And that would have been okay. Do you think they would have like, do you think people would have thought Snape was like full of it? I guess they would if they showed him the car. I mean,
Or they could have said that, oh, like something happened with the barrier. Like, my dad apparated us here.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. They would have had to been thinking about this.
Or, what if Snape realized that they had the car, but Ron and Harry are be like, no, Ron's parents just apparated us here. And then Arthur is like, oh yeah, I apparated them, because he doesn't want anyone to know about the car.
That seems like a very logical scenario if that was how that would have played out. And power to him. I wish that would have been the way it went, because I don't really know if they learned any specific lesson other than, I guess, like if they do anything else big, which God knows what that is, freaking burning down Hogwarts, maybe. If that's possible, then they won't be expelled. So I don't know.
Alrighty then. And that concludes episode 3 of Rambling Ravenpuffs, The Chamber of Secrets. Tune in next time where we will go over chapters 7 and 8, Mudbloods and Murmurs, and the Death Day Party.
Whoa. Scary. Death Day Party. Sorry, that took me back.
No, you forgot about the Death Day Party?
I have, it's news to me. All right, yeah. Sorry.
Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.